Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 4th of August. First hour of the program today, 4,000 FAA employees have been furloughed. There are stop work orders on more than 200 construction projects affecting some 70,000 workers. Airline passengers don't have to pay ticket taxes, which typically average about $30 on a $300 round-trip fare. That is keeping lots and lots of tax dollars from being collected. And there are some questions about whether or not everything is really safe. One of our guests, the first hour of the program, talks about the individuals responsible for ensuring that commercial airports comply with federal regulations. And those people, regional inspectors who travel up to five airports in a two-week period, each of them do that, are doing their work on their own dime right now, just to make sure everything is safe. We're going to be talking about the issues behind all of this the first hour of our program today with two guests, Edward Wyatt, a reporter for the New York Times, and Ashley Halsey, a transportation reporter for the Washington Post. Hour number two of our program, who would have thought Grover Cleveland could be absolutely fascinating? Obviously, people in his time thought he was, but we're going to speak with the author of The President is a Sick Man, wherein the supposedly virtuous Grover Cleveland survives a secret surgery at sea and vilifies the courageous newspaper man who dared expose the truth. This book goes way beyond that particular incident, which in itself is absolutely fascinating. But it looks at what was going on in the Grover Cleveland administration, his family, some of the other prominent politicians who were around during that time, the gold and silver standard, the depression that people were living through, how they turned against this president. So that's coming up, hour number two of our show. Both hours, of course, you're welcome to join our conversation. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And our first guest is Edward Wyatt, reporter for the New York Times. Edward, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hello. Glad to be here.
The Transportation Secretary, as you write, LaHood, said, no safety issues will be compromised. Is that true? Are they being compromised or not?
Well, it's hard to tell yet. There are 40 people, FAA workers, who their job is to inspect airports to make sure they comply with FAA regulations. That's everything from inspecting runway lights to taxiways and runways. And their job is to make sure that everything is compliant and that airports get their safety certificates. Now, those people, as you said, are working without pay. They're paying their own way to travel from airport to airport. The FAA says there are no safety problems, but some airport operators that we've talked to said, yes, you're not going to see anything immediately, but the longer this goes on, the longer construction projects are delayed, especially in the northern tier of the country. If you miss the prime construction season, problems are going to start to show up, and those will be safety problems.
Mm. And you also have to wonder how long these people can travel on their own dime. That gets to be expensive.
It does. You know, I don't think there are a lot of people who would be fortunate enough, particularly their government workers, to be able to work without pay and pay all their own travel expenses for a month, which is perhaps how long this could be going on, given that Congress is on recess for that long.
Do you imagine there's any chance that it could break before then? The president has called everybody back in session. Is that likely to happen to deal with this issue?
It seems unlikely that all of Congress will come back, but they don't need to. Congress is doing what's known as a pro forma session over the next month, primarily as a tactic to avoid recess appointments by the president. But they can, on any day, with the agreement of the leaders of both parties, walk into each house of Congress and, by unanimous consent of the one or two people there, approve a bill. And both houses could do it and approve a bill and send it to the president. The problem is that there are sticking points that neither side wants to budge on, and they say they're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm. And let's start with this sticking point, that's a provision that would overturn a national mediation board rule allowing airline and railroad employees to form a union by a simple majority of those voting. Is that one of the big sticking points?
It is one of the sticking points, but oddly, it's not something that has to be dealt with in order to put these FAA workers back to work.
Oh, it doesn't?
No. Over the last 4 years, the FAA has gotten temporary extensions on its budget authorization. 20 times Congress has said, okay, we're going to give you a short-term extension. That's in part because they haven't been able to agree on a long-term extension. The short-term bills that have come up, the House passed one that wants to extend it through September, mid-September, and it includes some details about service to rural airports that Democrats have objected to. But Democrats say the larger issue is this labor issue, and that if they give in on this rural airport clause in this one bill to do a temporary extension, that when that comes due or when they negotiate the longer-term extension, Republicans are going to, as they say, hold them hostage to more demand.
Mm. And what is the story with those rural airports, Edward?
Well, there are a lot of airports in the country where people need air service. They want air service to be able to do business and to travel, but it's not economical for commercial airlines to offer service there. They would lose money. So there's a program called the Essential Air Service Program, which subsidizes flights to smaller rural airports to get people from those places to central air hubs, big airports like Denver and Atlanta. That program has been in place for a long time. Some of the subsidies, given the small population of these around these rural airports, are quite large. There's one in Nevada that's over $3,000 a passenger for the number of passengers who come through there in a given year. So the Republicans have said we want to cut some of those. The Democrats have also said we want to cut some of those. In fact, Harry Reid, the senator from Nevada, has said $3,000 is too much to pay for a subsidy to an airport in Nevada, and we need to cut that. But the Democrats still don't want to approve this bill that includes this clause on these subsidies because they think that they'll be forced to make worse deals down the road.
Mm-hmm. Some Democrats, I can't remember who, I'm sure you know, have said that this is politically motivated, too, that the 13 cities that were targeted have strong Democratic constituencies. Is that true or not?
Well, they were. 10 of them are cities that were included in the Democrats' own bill in the Senate. They drew the line at airports that are less than 90 miles from a commercial hub, saying that if you're that close, you don't need a subsidy. And one of those is in West Virginia, which is the state of Senator Rockefeller, who is chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee. They also added some clauses with a per-passenger subsidy limit, and that included Harry Reid's state and the airport in Ely, Nevada.
And what about the issue of these taxes that we're not getting anymore, the ticket tax?
Well, by refusing to grant an extension to the FAA for its ability to collect these taxes, the federal government is foregoing $30 million a day in taxes on airline tickets that are bought by consumers. You know, that works out to about $200 million a week. And if Congress doesn't resolve this before it gets back into session in September, the federal government will lose more than $1 billion. Now, a lot of people who are traveling today on airplanes paid that ticket tax when they bought their ticket. They are due a refund for that money, and that's going to cost the government money. And it's so far, they haven't come up, either the IRS or the airlines, with an easy way to request and get your refund. People who are buying tickets today are not paying the tax, but some airlines have raised their prices to make it look like you're paying the same price, and the airlines are just pocketing the difference.
Oh, my. Where does all that money go that's collected on taxes? Does it go back into the FAA for airline safety, et cetera, airport safety?
Yes, it goes into the airport trust fund, and that is used to pay for construction projects at airports and also to pay the salaries of some FAA workers, including these 40 safety inspectors who have been laid off. Now, we should say the FAA has 47,000 employees. 43,000 of them are working. There have only been 4,000 that have been laid off. Those 43,000, the vast majority of FAA employees, are paid out of the general fund. And that pot of money still has dollars in it to be able to pay those employees' salaries. The parts of the facilities group and parts of the FAA that deal specifically with airports are paid out of this airport trust fund, and therefore the safety inspectors who look at airports are in that, and they're not getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
They don't include, for example, air traffic controllers and airplane safety inspectors. Those people are getting paid. They're still on the job. And as the Transportation Secretary insists, they are making sure that flying is safe.
If their salaries were threatened in some way by all of this, maybe it would be settled sooner.
I think if you did something like if the air traffic controllers' salaries were threatened, if there were things that started causing delays in passenger schedules, then you would have a lot more impetus to get this solved.
Right. Tell me, Edward, about those other 70,000 are the numbers that we're hearing, construction workers, other workers affected by this.
Well, that is a rather squishy number, I think. It's a number that both sides have used. There are construction projects going on at hundreds of airports around the country. Those construction projects, by and large, are paid for by the FAA. Runway extensions, new gate areas, security screening areas, and those are generally bid out to private construction companies. Some things the FAA is building itself on property it controls, for example, control towers. So the FAA can't build its control towers because it doesn't have money to continue on construction projects. So it has stopped work on those and put construction workers out of work. The other projects that airports themselves are paying for and getting reimbursed by the FAA, those include thousands more construction workers. Some airports have continued those projects on their own dime with the hope that the FAA eventually will come through with reimbursements for them. Some of them have just stopped. And the government estimates that there are 70,000 construction workers and related jobs that have been put in jeopardy or damaged by this construction shutdown.
Something you don't need during economic tough times, huh?
No. At times like this, any job is something that contributes to the economy. The fact that you have 4,000 FAA workers laid off and construction workers on 250 construction projects directly affected by the FAA shutdown is a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And going back for a moment to those rural airports, those subsidies, what are your thoughts about that, Edward? Do you think that transportation service is vital, or are so many of those airports within an hour's drive of an airport that it's a subsidy that we can do without?
Well, commercial air service is an important part of the economy, not only because the airline service is a big business, but it allows people to get from place to place quickly and to conduct business, even in this day and age where we have, instantaneous communication. You have to do a lot of things in person. And so, we subsidize a lot of transportation in this country. The federal government builds roads so we can drive quickly from one place to another. Subsidizing air traffic to rural areas keeps cars off the road. So you could argue that there are economic benefits to allowing for that kind of subsidy to get people from one airport to another more quickly.
We welcome phone calls. We're talking this hour about the failure to end the stalemate over temporary financing for the FAA. The workers who are in some cases, paying out of their own pockets to keep vital services going, the number of people who have been furloughed, the number of construction and related workers whose jobs are suspended until this is all figured out. And the question is whether or not this will be figured out. We'll talk about the political maneuverings here, what the president has had to say about all of this as well. Here's our phone number for you to join our conversation if you have any questions about this or thoughts about it. We'll have two guests with us. Edward Wyatt, a reporter for the New York Times, who's been on this story, is our guest right now. And our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you'd like to use the email address, please do that at talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. Chrissy Pease is our on-air producer today. She'll be answering your phone calls, and we'll get you on hold and on the air as soon as we can. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour number two of our program, we'll be speaking with Matthew Algio. He's a reporter, a public radio reporter, and we interviewed him, it's hard to believe it was a couple of years ago, I think now. He's the author of Harry Truman's excellent adventure, The True Story of a Great American Road Trip. His latest book is fascinating, The President is a Sick Man. It's about this relatively unknown episode in the life of this American president who went out to sea because he wanted nobody to know that he could be very, very sick, and how a newspaper man who was top-notch in his day was royally vilified for writing the truth about what happened on a yacht where a major operation was performed on the president. It's a fascinating story, as is the whole presidency of Grover Cleveland, so we will learn a lot and be absolutely riveted, hour number two of our show. 800-486-8655, the FAA and budget issue and all of that, what's behind it, what the answer is to solving it is on the table this hour of the program, and Edward Wyatt remains with us. We go to Tom from Mequon, our first call. Hi, Tom.
Hi, interesting show, and I'm glad you're bringing this up. My view is this, is that I've noticed since the elections of last fall is that the extremely powerful, rich robber barons, I mean Republicans, that they've decided to pull out all the stops and to destroy unions and thereby destroy the competition, meaning the Democrats, because the Democrats get a lot of their funding from unions, which is only right because it's, you know, working people trying to keep their jobs and keep, you know, keep a living wage, which is being destroyed quickly. And I think that's really what this is that it's the robber barons, the Republicans, deciding to pull out the stops and to really gain power and a control by getting rid of unions at all costs, even though they say that they're trying to save money. Really, they're not saving money, are they?
Edward.
Well, you in Wisconsin have a lot more experience recently with the union issue and than a lot of the rest of the country. One thing I would say is that the unionization issue in this case is one where the National Mediation Board, which only oversees union elections for airlines, changed a rule to say that you need a majority of the people voting to authorize a union rather than a majority of all employees affected. Essentially, before they changed the rule, if you didn't vote, that would be counted as a no vote. That makes it easier for unions to get authorization to organize at a company. After that rule was changed, the flight attendants union still failed with the easier rule to get 51% of employees at the merged Delta and Northwest to authorize a union. So, yes, the Republicans are trying to roll this back and make it harder for unions to organize. On the other hand, with this easier rule, you had a union election that employees themselves didn't want.
Oh, that's interesting. Thank you, Tom, very much for your call. Don in La Crosse is next. Hi, Don.
Hi. How are you today?
Okay. How are you, Don?
Oh, moving forward.
Well, good.
I guess with all this regulations on stuff with the unions and the way the politicians seem to be playing with their lives in Washington, is there any way that we can change the way that politicians are paid? I mean, can we change the way where they can vote themselves raises to where in each state there's we have elections every year for something or other, tack another one on as to whether these politicians get a bigger raise or whether their wages are frozen or something.
Or they'd have to pay out of their own pocket until they get certain bills taken care of. Edward, do you want to weigh in?
Well, that's an interesting suggestion. The problem is I think that Congress votes itself on how much to pay itself. And they could presumably decide to put the question of whether or not they get salary raises in the hands of state legislatures or somewhere else. How likely they are to do that, I think the likelihood is pretty small. But what would be interesting is, you know, to have congressmen answer the question, would you pay all of your own travel expenses and work for free for a month, if you yourself weren't able to come to an agreement on salaries?
Mm-hmm.
Congress exempts itself from a lot of its own laws. So I think the answer there might be no.
Thank you, John, for the call. An email from Jim in Cribbets. Construction workers aren't the only ones affected by the FAA furloughs. I retired late last year as a contractor at their technical center in New Jersey. Now some of my former coworkers have been furloughed along with their FAA colleagues. They were working on new systems to make air travel safe and more efficient. All this is Jim's take, because some conservatives have been convinced by their big business donors to try to take away more workers' rights by denying unionization.
Well, there are, as we said, 4,000 FAA workers who are out of work. A lot of those work on research and development projects, including what the FAA calls Next Gen, which is the next generation of air traffic control. Is something that the FAA has been working on for a long time. All work on that has stopped now. Also put out of work are the people who approve reimbursement grants for airports to do construction projects or other facilities maintenance. So airports that are spending their own money and are supposed to be paid by the federal government are not getting paid, mainly because the people who oversee that payment process have been put out of work by this furlough.
John in St. Germain, hi. John, you want to turn that radio down, please, or we won't be able to talk.
Hey, sure. Mainly because the people who are... Sorry.
All right. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I have a solution, much like the last caller, similar but a little bit harsher, that all Congress people... In fact, I'm worried about this, concerned about this red herring about Obama being a socialist. I mean... There are more red herrings out there than we can eat. In any event, that all people in Congress who fail to move on legislation within a given period of time, that they give up their month's salary for that month, that they fail to do that, and that they lose 1 year of their pension starting at the first year after retirement. And that they should get it hit in the pocketbook just like we would if we were working for an employer and failed to do something for him.
I think that's an interesting suggestion. And, I think that when people go to the polls in 2012, they're going to be asking themselves a lot of questions about, what's transpired over the last year with all of these sort of crises that Congress has either created itself or failed to deal with until the last minute.
How do you think all of this is going to end. Do you imagine there will be no action until September? And even then it might be problematic?
Well, you know, I hate to say it's hard to say, but it really is. I mean, I don't think many people expected that after 20 reauthorizations of the FAA over 4 years, that Congress would get stuck in not approving the 21st. I don't think people largely expected that even with these difficulties, that Congress wouldn't find a way to find some compromise to keep 4,000 people and tens of thousands of construction workers in their jobs while it went on a month-long vacation. You know, there are ways that Congress can act without bringing all of its members back. The White House is looking at what actions the president can take unilaterally to try to solve this. So, again, the conventional wisdom is that this won't last for a month, but the conventional wisdom has been wrong two out of two times so far.
Right. And, Edward, when you think long and hard about it, why couldn't they come to a compromise on this? Is this just holding fast to some philosophical principle, or is it you're just tired and you want to go home and sit on the beach because you've been through the debt ceiling crisis, or what is it?
Well, I think this is holding fast to philosophical principles. It's certainly not about saving the country money. With the FAA shut down now in its 13th day, the federal government has lost more money than it pays in an entire year for the essential air service, for this subsidy program to rural airports. So you've already lost all of that money. And every day that goes by, another $30 million is lost. The cuts that Republicans have proposed would save about $16 million this year. That's half of a day of the cost of an FAA shutdown. So it's not about the principle of money. It's about trying to make sure that you don't give in on any political fight in Congress.
Mm-hmm. Well, people have had it. I'm sure you're sensing that. People have had it with that attitude. I don't know how it will change, but the American public is saying, all right, that's it.
People have been expressing a lot of anger about what's been going on in Congress, but they've been doing that for years. What we find again and again is that people dislike Congress, but they reelect their own congressmen. They dislike spending by the federal government, but they like when their congressman brings projects home to their own district. So whether or not this anger will translate into real change, I think is something that voters have to ask themselves.
Edward, thank you so much for your reporting and sharing time with us this morning.
I'm glad to do it.
Edward Wyatt, reporter for The New York Times, who's been covering this FAA shutdown story for some time and is a fine reporter. We're going to continue our conversation. So if you're on hold, please stay where you are. We're just changing guests. Ashley Halsey is a transportation reporter for The Washington Post. And Ashley has been writing on, of course, this issue for quite some time now, since the shutdown on July 23rd. We're looking at all the related issues, and I want to spend a little more time talking about what the administration may do to change this, if there is any kind of provision that would allow the administration to act on its own to get people back to work here, or if there's any chance that, considering what Edward was talking about, the pro forma session, that on any day there could be unanimous consent to deal with this and to keep this agency open and allow people to go back to work and to not have to pay themselves for doing their jobs. Our phone number remaining the same, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Ashley, thank you very much for joining us.
You're most welcome.
Tell me what you think the president may have up his sleeve to end all of this. Can he do something just by executive order or make some unilateral decision?
Well, the nuances of Congress and the executive branch are such that I don't want to say definitively what he may be able to do. But I think the answer to that is no. Congress has the authorizing power on matters like this, and my understanding is that without a congressional authorization, this will go on. Now, that doesn't mean that the president doesn't have room to maneuver, but what those maneuvers might be, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is going to go on unless Congress takes the initiative to end it. I think this is going to go on until they return in September.
And what can he do politically in terms of trying to coerce people or persuade people that the best thing to do was to get this over with before September?
Well, he's done all of that already. He has made some calls to leaders of Congress. Some of the people on the Hill tell me that he might be able to push more strongly, but Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood has certainly taken the lead in doing so, and he has been going nonstop since this problem arose in talking with all of the legislative leaders and trying to bring public pressure to bear by making public appearances and public statements and giving a great many interviews to folks to try to get the public fired up. The public really has not been engaged in this issue for a couple of reasons. One was that certainly it was overshadowed by the debt crisis, and so people weren't really aware that this was taking place. And the second is it has not affected the flying public in any way because the air traffic controllers are still on the job, and there is not an issue, as LaHood is very quick to underscore, of air safety. It's perfectly safe to fly. If people thought that their safety was in jeopardy, I think the public pressure would mount very quickly and this would be resolved.
And would you agree with his assessment that no safety issues are being compromised?
Yeah, I have no doubt about that. If there's anything that LaHood is absolutely passionate about, it's safety. And if he thought there was a safety issue out there, he would deal with it, or he wouldn't let planes fly. Now that's extreme. He's not going to go there, but he's not going to let people fly around this country in an unsafe situation.
Mm-hmm. Ashley, why have there been 20 reauthorizations in the past, and now we don't have one?
Well, it's a complex question. First of all, there have been 20 extensions in the past because Congress, even when the Democrats controlled both houses, could not agree on a long-term transportation authorization. Transportation and aviation, both areas, have long-term 2 to 6 year authorizations, so people can build airports, build roadways, and the like. They haven't been able to agree on that because they've been fighting over some pretty petty things that don't affect a great many flyers, or the flying public, and then this new issue arose that complicated things even more. So there are three issues, none of which have a direct impact on your ability to fly around this country, that have stalled this. And this time, the House House Republicans decided that they were not going to send another routine extension bill to the Senate because they wanted the Senate to negotiate more earnestly on this longer-term reauthorization. Now, the senators will tell you that they have been doing so, and that's why they're angry with the House, that the House encumbered this extension bill with some other things that the House knew would annoy the senators.
And those things are air service subsidy, unions.
Yeah. The air service thing has been a matter of debate for a while, and continues to be, but it's one of those things that could be negotiated. The House wants to eliminate the Essential Air Services program, which provides rural service to subsidies for rural airport service. But that's a that's the kind of things that the two houses negotiate over, and they would reach a negotiated settlement. But what happened in this instance was to spur negotiations along in the extension bill. An extension bill usually just says we are going to extend funding for this agency on a temporary basis until such date. That's usually the full extent of the language in an extension. In this case, the House added some stuff about essential air services to an extension bill. That's not unique, but it is unusual. It is extraordinary. And the Senate balked at that.
I see. Was there a time in the recent past when we were able to do long-term funding?
Oh, yeah. There are right now, the House and Senate each have passed long-term aviation funding bills, and what they're trying to do now, they did that this year, and what they're trying to do is reconcile those two. And I think that they started out with about 250 differences, and the last I heard, they were down to about a dozen things that were still to be resolved. One of them was this essential air services thing, which is a secondary point at the moment, but the big, big stumbling block, and what's really at issue here is a provision about how airlines can unionize, how unions can be formed in airlines.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the issue.
Is it?
There's been a lot of smoke blowing that suggests this essential air service thing is the critical issue. And while it is an issue, it's not the critical issue. It's this unionization issue that really is what has this thing in a stalemate.
Our previous guest was talking, though, about a vote that was taken by flight attendants with the merger of Delta and Northwest, saying that didn't even pass. So what's the worry about unions?
Well, they've changed the rule, and it gets pretty deep in the weeds, but I'll try to explain it.
Okay, yeah, we got you.
The airline unionization used to be governed by the National Railway Act. The National Railway Act was changed in the 1930s after a bunch of crippling rail strikes, and they tried to make it. Congress tried to make it more difficult for railways to unionize. They did that by saying that in order for a union vote to carry in a railroad line, that they had to that anybody who didn't vote, if you were a member, potential member of the union, eligible to vote, and you chose not to vote, you didn't vote at all, you would be counted as a no vote,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a simple majority of those who vote, like most elections in
mm-hmm.
the country. The National Railway Act covers airline unionization. Well, 2 years ago, something called the National Mediation Board said, change the rule. They said, it's just going to be a simple majority for airline unionization now. Delta, there's been several unsuccessful efforts to unionize Delta. There is fear on the part of the Republicans that with this new ruling allowing a simple majority of those who cast ballots in a union election to carry the day, that Delta and some other airlines, most airlines are already unionized, but that some other airlines might be moved to unionization, and they feel that this older National Railway Act rule should not be overturned. So in their big bill, they have in their long-term reauthorization, they have negated the ruling of the National Mediation Board, which made a simple majority the necessary of those who cast votes, the necessary standard for union elections.
Thank you for the explanation.
I promise to make it not confusing, but I don't think I succeeded.
No, you were very, very clear because I've wondered about that, and thank you for the history, and I get it now. Thank you.
But that's the real issue, and they're blowing all this smoke about how it's about uh-huh. rural airport services.
Uh-huh.
That's a minor and easily negotiated issue.
Well, we have a special sensitivity to this issue in the state of Wisconsin, as you can
okay.
imagine.
I'm coming out there in a couple of months.
Certainly. Are you really?
Oh, yeah. For the Ironman Wisconsin in Madison.
You are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of us from this area are coming.
Are you from Wisconsin?
No, but I have good friends, Bob and Myra Enlow in Rui, Wisconsin, and I'm hoping to see them there. friends of many decades.
Wonderful. I hope they're listening and they hear you and you'll see each other.
They listen to your show religiously.
Oh, they do, really?
I'm sure, yes.
What a wonderful little world it is, huh? We're going to take phone calls for Ashley, transportation reporter for The Washington Post. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you'd like to send an email, do that, talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, this is really a fascinating book. I read it last night, most of it. The President is a Sick Man, wherein the supposedly virtuous Grover Cleveland survives a secret surgery at sea and vilifies the courageous newspaper man who dared expose the truth. It's not just about that fascinating incident, but, you know, we're talking about the labor issues and unions, some of which are, well, as our guest says, this half hour, front and center with this FAA problem. Grover Cleveland was dealing with the Pullman strike and Eugene Debs, and the book goes into great detail on that as well. And the feeling on the part of many people that the president, Cleveland, was siding with the rich in the country, and eventually people turned against him. They had thought him to be a decent and honest man, and later he was still thought that way. But it's an interesting time in maybe some parallels in American history. All right, let's go to phone calls for Ashley. Bill in Madison is our first caller for you. Hi, Bill.
Hello. What a lot of people haven't taken into account, and certainly it appears that the Congress hasn't, is that there's something of a space race going on between the United States and European Union. Back in the days of old when knights were bold, and air travel was not popular yet. The United States was the first country to be rich enough to have, you know, a public afforded to, take the airplane. So the American system of air traffic control was already a fait accompli when the rest of the world came into the picture. And so our system is basically the world system. Well, now that system is antiquated and is getting ready to supposedly be replaced by next gen, which the FAA was working on. Well, the European Union is working on their own system, and there's been something of a race to make sure who gets what to market. Because if the U.S. loses that race, then essentially we not only don't get our way in terms of air traffic control, but we have to toss out the old one and adopt the European system. So essentially, by this political jousting that the Republicans and Democrats in Congress can't seem to avoid doing these days, they've jeopardized the future of American air travel. And it's just incomprehensible to me that they would be so short-sighted and stupid.
Ashley.
My friend Bob has always told me that people in Wisconsin are smarter than anybody else.
Yeah, I'm with you. They are.
Exactly. I mean, what the caller just said is exactly on target. And I think the next-gen system, the 4,000 FAA people who've been furloughed include most of the people who are working on this next-gen system, which has been called the future of aviation. And that is not hyperbole. It's really true. And I could get into greater detail as to why, but what he said is exactly on target. We are competing. The U.S. aerospace industry exports a vast amount of technology to the rest of the world, beginning with companies like Boeing, who make big airlines and so forth. But if we develop the next-gen technology first, we will put our stamp on that commercially. Internationally, if China's working on it as well, and Europe develop their own systems and export that technology, then we lose a huge export market to the rest of the world. So in addition to the fact that this next-gen system is critical to the future of aviation in this country, the potential export market for it mounts into the multi-billion dollars over the year. So that's a very, very good observation.
So has work on this suspended as a result of the 4,000 furloughs?
Yes, and it has. A lot, the majority of the work has. I don't know whether it's several hundred or a thousand of the people involved are at the Atlantic City Tech Center, and there I was just up there a few weeks ago, and they've been developing the program there. And they are the people, because technically they're non-essential people. The people who Ray LaHood had to keep on the job are air traffic controllers. There are 14,075 of them. They had to stay on, and so did a lot of other people who are more essential. So even though this work, the work these next-gen technologists, engineers are doing is really critical to the future, LaHood couldn't argue that it was immediately necessary to keep them on the job, and so they're not. But this is a very important program and at a very important juncture, because right now the airlines are being asked to invest billions of dollars of their own money in this technology. And they're saying to the federal government, are you going to meet your deadlines to produce the system so that when we buy, think of it as buying it's a GPS-based system, but think about buying a GPS for your car that has all sorts of promising technology, but when you get it, the satellites aren't sending you the information to make it work. That's what the airlines are saying to the FAA. Hey, we'll invest in this as soon as we're sure that once we get the technology, you're going to be sending us the signals we need.
Right.
And when you have a delay in the production of the technology, which is what's happening right now as a consequence of this shutdown, then the airlines become more and more jittery.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bill, for your call. Diane in Prairie du Sac. Hi.
Hi. I was listening to the last caller, and I thought, oh, my goodness, is our Congress so dysfunctional that they can't even make decisions, and then this is so important? Can we not suspend their pay? They've suspended so many other people's pay. It's like they don't have a care in the world. It's all about them. And I hope the people in 2012, when they go to vote, remember all of our congressmen when it comes time to reelect them. And that is my comment for today.
All right, Diane. Thank you for your comment. Would you like to comment on the comment, Ashley?
What Diane said echoes what a great many of other people have said.
Art in Milwaukee. Hi, Art.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to bring it back home. The rule that apparently the Republicans in Congress are trying to impose to make it difficult to unionize, whereby if a majority of people in an election for a union vote for the union, it still would lose because a bunch of other people didn't vote, is exactly the same thing that Scott Walker put in the very controversial bill in Wisconsin, which I guess may or may not be law, namely that every year public sector unions, state employees, would have to vote for whether to continue the union or not. They have almost nothing to bargain over anymore, of course, under the same law. And then if a majority of the people who vote to continue the union, still loses if a bunch of other people didn't vote. So it's majority of everybody who could have voted has to vote yes. Otherwise, it's deemed that only a small minority voted for the union, even if the majority voted in the election for the union. Same rule. That's what we've got here in Wisconsin if that law goes into final effect.
Thank you, Art, for the call. Ashley.
Wisconsin politics, I watch from afar, but I can't comment on.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the call. But it seems to be, I guess, what Art is pointing to is that there seems to be a concern on the state level, on the national level, that this is an issue that a lot of Republicans are concerned about, and so it's finding its way into legislation in many places.
Yeah, I think there's no question of that, and I think that the Republicans have always been concerned, or historically have been concerned, that unions have a little bit too much sway, and they feel they need what they see as a balance between the power of the unions and the power of the business.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ashley, thank you very much. I guess you're a particularly busy guy during these dog days of August.
I appreciate being on, and you're right. We usually, during the year, I put little story ideas into file folders that I know that I can get to in August when things slow down, and this year the folder is gathering dust.
I'm sure it is. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. It's been my pleasure.
Our guest this part of the program, Ashley Halsey, a transportation reporter for The Washington Post, and we also thank Edward Wyatt, reporter for The New York Times, for filling us in on this story. There are many aspects to it, aren't there? Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We will have the news coming up next from National Public Radio. Please join us for the next hour. I'm sure you're going to learn a whole lot and find it just fascinating. We've interviewed the guest before, so we know he's very, very good, and the book is as well. The author of The President is a Sick Man.